This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. Every weekday, we talk with public officials, business and education leaders, nonprofit organizations, and more about the issues of the day. As we work hard to help you stay connected with local news and information, presented by Roseburg Foot and Ankle Specialists. Now, here's Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Afternoon. Thanks for being here. Last hour, Republican candidate for Governor Christine Drazen had a press conference in Portland to unveil what she's calling the Drazen Plan, and she joins us right now to jump right into the discussion about it. Thanks for being on today.
Thanks for having me, Kyle. Good to be back.
So I know that you've got a number of elements to this plan, and we're going to kind of work our way through it. I guess, first of all, what kind of led to putting this whole plan, this whole idea together?
Well, we can't and don't operate in rhetoric. People need to understand what it is that I will do as governor, and I want to be really clear with them, not just why I'm running, but what they can expect.
And so as you put this together to look ahead, if you're elected, let's start with the affordability aspect. I mean, it's one of the first things people talk about is the high cost of living, especially in Oregon. How do you plan to address that?
Well, a big reason why Oregon is uniquely expensive has been the politicians in Salem who have added a very heavy tax burden to our state and a very heavy regulatory burden to our state, to businesses and to the price of energy. And that is a big part of why people are really struggling right now. Your utility bills are going through the roof, and some of that is that your utility companies are trying to prevent wildfire from happening, and so they're trimming up the plants and everything that's around their assets. But the other part of it is that the legislature has mandated that they go to 100% clean within just a few years up ahead. And that process is also increasingly expensive. A carbon-free future for how we heat our homes and how we cook and everything else is just very expensive. And my approach to affordability in Oregon is to take responsibility for the things that we've done within the state of Oregon that has uniquely driven up costs. So our gas is uniquely expensive because of the clean fuel standard. It's not just 40 cents in taxes, and we talk about gas taxes a lot. You and I had a lot of conversations when we were evaluating what to do about rebalancing ODOT's budget. But if you go past that, past the part of it where we're just trying to make sure that government can provide the services that people need, there are policies built in that drive costs through regulation and through mandates. And those are the things that I want to have conversations with Oregonians about and the legislature, and ensure that if there are rules and regulations that I can reduce and repeal that can help bring costs back down for Oregonians, that's what I'm going to do.
So what are some of the things, one of the aspects ties into taxes. One of the things that has come up a lot in recent years, especially as real estate values have increased over time, a lot of people find themselves at risk of getting hit by the estate tax.
Yeah, and we have to change the estate tax. I am so tired of talking to people who are planning to retire in other states because they don't want to be here in their retirement years because the estate tax is so heavy. It's such a heavy burden for families that have a little bit of retirement savings, plus they have a home. Many of them are now bumping into the estate tax. It's crazy to think that you can, just with the price of a home and a little bit of savings or a little bit of retirement, that you can hit that $1 million threshold. But more and more Oregonians are hitting that. It has been the standard in Oregon for years and years. It hasn't been adjusted in years and years and years. And so we need to adjust that, and we need to have a more rational approach to it. I supported making it disappear entirely and repealing it. I mean, there's not that many states across the nation that have an estate tax like we do. There's a federal one, but very few states have their own. And Oregon has instituted that, but all it's done is take people that have really built a legacy in our state, and they're choosing to go other places once they hit retirement age. That doesn't serve our state. It takes the legacy families and businesses that have been established, and it takes away our ability to build on that for the next generation, and that's not helpful. So while we talk a lot about these policies and, you know, why were they put in place, and what is the alternative to that, when it comes to the estate tax, it's driving Oregonians away. And I don't want to do that. I want to keep Oregonians here. I want their investments here. I want their philanthropic giving here. I want them to retire here. This needs to be a place that people can stay. And the estate tax, for far too many Oregonians, is going to hit them, and they don't even realize it until it's coming. And that's when they understand how aggressive it is and how difficult it is. I know so many people that say that they've had to take out an insurance plan in case anything were to happen to them. They know their family couldn't afford to pay the estate tax. And so the insurance plan is intended to cover that. You shouldn't have to take out an insurance plan to be able to cover your taxes for your family.
Let's talk about the economy. What are your thoughts there? You say that your plan would make Oregon open for business again. How would you do that?
Well, we need to just absolutely let businesses know that we want to be partners in keeping them here. That means that the regulatory environment, agency regulations, we need to recognize that we need businesses in Oregon. Right now, we have agencies that look at them like they owe government something. They treat them like they are the enemy, like everything that they do is, you know, somehow harmful and wrong. The businesses that are out there in Roseburg, they're great businesses. They provide jobs. And the people that work in those businesses are grateful to have a job and they enjoy working there. Well, we need those businesses to stay and not feel like the government is part of the problem for them, and that where they're adding costs or adding regulations that don't benefit public safety or their workforce. That's really the issue, is when we have a regulatory burden that isn't there to protect the environment or isn't there to protect workers, and it's just a political overlay or an agenda, then it's adding costs, it's harming businesses, it's slowing down the that business's ability to grow. And those regulations have got to go. So we're going to address reputation, regulation, and taxation. The reputation is going to be, we're open for business. We want businesses to grow here. Come to Oregon. It's a beautiful place to build a life. Come here, build your business. And from a regulatory environment, we're going to take away the slowness, the layers. We're going to get PS. We're going to move fast. And then from a taxation environment, we need to be competitive. We cannot treat Oregonians themselves or the businesses that hire people like they need to perpetually pay for the growth of government. We want them to pay for growth in their businesses so that we have more jobs.
Let's talk about the homeless aspect. Obviously, a lot of conversations around that for the last maybe almost decade. What do you do differently in Oregon?
We have had an approach to homelessness which has been almost exclusively focused on housing, as if everybody living on our streets, all they really need is a key to a hotel room or a tiny house and everything's going to be fine. That's just not true. It's just not true. It's disingenuous, and it has no compassion when you treat the people living on our streets that way, because what's true is that the vast majority of them are facing challenges with addiction, drug use, mental health. All those things are, in fact, a part of the challenges that are happening on our streets and on our public lands right now. So my approach to homelessness is going to be to focus on recovery and services to people that are living on our streets and need to get into that detox, get into rehab, and then get into long-term sobriety and recovery. That's not Oregon's policy today. Our policies assume that people are going to stay addicted to drugs. Oregon spends 70% of every dollar for shelter space and homelessness services on low barrier, and only 30 cents of every dollar on high barrier, meaning we are assuming that people are sober and they just need some help. And that has now been put into Oregon law for the next 8 years. I find that to be the most shocking and frankly offensive policy that I've seen in a long time, and that's saying a lot, because it fails to assume that we're going to make progress on this problem. And Oregonians deserve better than that. But for the tax dollars that we're paying, Oregonians should feel like we're all living in Disneyland, that everywhere we go, it's sunshine and roses and birds are chirping behind us, because we are paying such a heavy tax burden here. We should be getting that level of services. We shouldn't see people on our streets that need help and aren't getting it. We shouldn't see, you know, potholes and road projects that can't seem to advance. We should see schools that are just taking off and our kids are competing with students across the nation for some of the best and brightest jobs and opportunities and next opportunities out there. But instead, that's just not what our schools are delivering. So when it comes to homelessness, recovery-focused orientation towards the needs on our streets, ensuring that people get help, and if they don't want help and they're just here to live on our streets and use drugs, that those folks have got to go. They cannot be allowed to stay. We need accountability here. And that means being real clear that if you want to get help, we will identify opportunities for you to get into programs and get help. But if you don't, you are not going to just simply, you know, tear up our communities and impact quality of life for everybody else here.
One of the aspects of this that might get attention in certain parts of Douglas County, you in this document talk about supporting law enforcement and restoring public safety by allowing jurisdictions to clean up public spaces. Talk about that.
Well, that's an important part of this. We need law enforcement to be able to enforce existing laws. And so we have today a Supreme Court that said that local law enforcement can manage for time, place, and manner. We happen to have a law in the books here that Tina Kotek pushed when she was Speaker of the House. That's the only one in the nation that actually says you can camp in public spaces legally in Oregon. Well, we need to repeal that bill, and we need local governments to be able to manage their own communities, their own parks, their own sidewalks, and to be able to hold people accountable while compassionately connecting them with services. And if they refuse to do that, we need to be able to, you know, get them into circuit court, get them into drug court, get them help, get them treatment, or they need to suffer the consequences of that.
Now, we were going to try to get through the rest of these, but our time is limited. Is this going to pop up as a document on your website at some point?
Yes, the Drazen Plan. You can find it at christinefororegon.com or just search Drazen Plan and it'll come up. And I am excited about the opportunity to talk to Oregonians about affordability, our schools, homelessness, and our quality of life, and doing everything I can to turn Oregon around.
So let's talk about the education aspect. What would you highlight from that part of the documents?
Well, we need our graduation standards restored. We have today a diploma that is just a participation prize. And that's because back in 2020, our Board of Education and the state legislature took away our requirements that kids are proficient before they receive their diploma. We need to restore our graduation requirements so kids are ready to go pursue their best future. And we need our kids to be able to read. And we know that we have among the worst in the nation for reading and math in the third and fourth grade. We need to focus on that and ensure that our teachers are being trained up in the science of reading and that the curriculum that our kids are getting in the classroom is the best curriculum to help them learn how to read by that point. And we can do it, but we are going to have to put some focus behind it. And instead, in recent years, they've been doing social promotion for our kids in schools, instead of ensuring that they are ready to go and proficient and capable readers before they move on. And that's going to be a priority of my administration. And frankly, we got to get politics out of the classroom to get that done. Schools are to provide an academic environment where students are taught how to think, not what to think. And that has been a challenge that we've been facing in Oregon for a long time. It's time to restore that balance back on the academic side.
You mentioned increasing classroom time. I believe Oregon has a shorter school year than a lot of states. What would you change there?
Right now, we have local school districts that are able to bargain for what an instructional hour looks like, and we need to abandon that concept. So across districts across our state right now, one, we need to add instructional time to the calendar. We need to come back in line with the rest of the nation, and we need to get much closer to the average instructional days that you'll see in Washington or across the nation. And we're far behind at this point. But also today, we have districts that will negotiate at the bargaining table as if parent-teacher conferences are instructional time for students when it just isn't. No student is learning how to read, write, civics, science, whatever, in that time where they're having parent-teacher conferences. So that shouldn't be considered instructional time, but it's different today across districts across our state. So we need to have a uniform standard for what instructional time is, and we need to actually have a standard that is meaningfully competitive with the amount of time that they're spending in the classroom across the nation.
Let's talk about housing. You've got a number of things there.
You know, housing is an incredible opportunity to, again, address the regulatory challenges. For our local communities, we know that permits can sometimes be excruciatingly slow. We need local governments and counties to expedite permits. We need to have opportunities to have standardized plans that can be expedited through that process. We need to do everything that we can to best utilize the ground, the land that's within the urban growth boundary, and identify the barriers to being able to use the land that is there in a way that's responsible, and, you know, but gets more homes built. And today, we know that when I talk to builders anyway, that some of the biggest challenges they have is the slow responsiveness that they get sometimes from their local government approvals and the cost that's coming out of our local governments for system development charges. So that's driving the cost of these projects through the roof too. So the conversations with local governments need to be, we're partners here, but we're gonna work with you to ensure that you can expedite some of this stuff. What are the barriers for you? Are we adding regulatory burdens on the local governments that's slowing this thing down? Let's identify what those are. Let's roll those back so that you can move fast. If we're going to have more homes built, we need to use the access to the resources that we have, and we need to get the regulatory burdens out of the way.
And one of the aspects is the availability of land. That's for Roseburg certainly been a big issue that has stymied some of the growth potential.
Yeah, we have. But even within that urban growth boundary, we know that there are regulatory limitations to the land that can be used within that urban growth boundary that are unique to Oregon. So let's have a conversation about anything that we're doing to make it even harder within the urban growth boundary to be able to build there and to be able to actually do some of the infill and some of the projects that would otherwise be available if we had standards that were more consistent with states across the nation. And I hear from builders all the time that continues to be a problem. At the same time, let's actually have a conversation about land use in Oregon. I believe in protecting our farm and forest land, and that is not just a part of our heritage, but that part of our economy is critical to our future. But we cannot allow special interests to use the courts to slow down the projects and expansion of the Oregon urban growth boundary in ways that are welcomed by local communities just because they have access to it. So we cannot have extremists getting out there and stopping, you know, any of our wildfire mitigation efforts and forest management. And we also can't have extremists out there stopping necessary projects that have the support of the community to be able to build homes. And right now, our courts are being weaponized when it comes to our land use system for our forests and for building.
Now, final aspect is you talk about accountability. What can you say there in the last couple minutes?
Oregonians are giving the state almost $140 billion a year of their hard-earned taxpayers for what it costs to go to your parks, what it costs to buy a hunting and fishing license, what it costs to buy gas, and all those taxes that are built in, what it costs in your income taxes, all of these things. And for all of that money, government needs to know that public service means serving the public. They should pick up the phone when you call. They should answer your questions. They should understand that the role of government is to be accountable to people and deliver results. We need to clean up the crisis on our streets. We need to have law enforcement come when you call. We need strong schools. Our government must be accountable to the people of this state for results. Common sense, basic concepts here. This is absolutely doable for us as Oregonians. We can get our state back where it functions, where we are a draw for people across the nation because it's amazing and beautiful here, and where you can come here to build a business and grow. But we've got to have a government that is responsive to the people of the state and is held accountable for actually achieving these results.
As you move forward in the campaign now, heading into September, when things really ramp up, I imagine you've got a pretty aggressive schedule going on.
I love traveling across the state and talking to Oregonians every single day. It is inspiring to hear people that are doing amazing things here, both in their business lives and for the people that are volunteering and the people that make our communities run and put on our community events and, you know, our mentors in the classroom. I mean, just Oregonians themselves just love this place and they're so committed to making it amazing. It's time for their government to be accountable to them and to rise to that high standard of excellence. And so every single day I'm reminded of the duty and obligation I have to Oregonians to fight and do everything I can to make sure that we have the opportunity for our state to listen to them, to respect them, and to serve their best interests again, and to stop raising taxes on their backs.
And before we wrap up again, how can people find out more about this plan?
15 for Oregon is the website, and it's the Drazen Plan, and you're going to see it at the top of the website. Appreciate your time today, Kyle.
Christine Drazen, Republican candidate for governor, 1257, News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This has been Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. Listen every weekday afternoon at 12:30 to stay connected with what's happening in your community. It's presented by Roseburg Foot and Ankle Specialists. Today's interview will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it with others. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.